Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Own a small biz and need a reliable way to reach new customers? Try TikTok for Business.
We've generated over 100,000 leads, which has converted into over 40,000 sales for our pet insurance policies. I am the CEO of Spot Pet Insurance. TikTok's Smart Plus AI-powered automation takes the guesswork out of targeting, bidding, and optimizing creative. If I can advertise on TikTok, you can too.
Drive more leads and scale your business today with TikTok for Business. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTokAds.
Philly, you are so wonderful and interesting. You deserve a local news podcast all your own.
Check out the Johncast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One on One.
I had a Doberman and a German Shepherd. This is how I learned to dribble. And I would play with them, like dribbling the ball, and they both would try to get the ball and they couldn't get it. So I had two dogs on between my legs, around my back, dribbling like that. And that made me quicker. My ball handling skills were good. I could really play any position.
And our guest this week is Valerie Walker. She was a tremendous basketball player for Cheney University and was a key part of the Cheney team that went to the first NCAA women's basketball tournament final. Valerie, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you for having me.
Before we look back, what are you doing these days?
Well, I am a school teacher. I work at Washington Avenue School in Pleasantville, New Jersey. I'm a basic skills instructor, meaning I tutor students who may struggle in the general classroom, pull them out and teach them by targeted instruction that meets their needs and try to get them back into the classroom on track. So that's what I'm doing. As a matter of fact, I am a new hire. I just got hired in January. So I'm really happy about that.
Was education always beyond basketball? Was that always the goal or what you wanted to do with your career?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, I always wanted to be a physical education teacher, you know, because I am an athlete. You know, I'm an active person and I always was. So I always thought about being a gym teacher. But when that didn't work out, you know, and I was doing substitute work, then I just figured I'd just meet, you know, go into the classroom. So it ended up me, you know, just being in the classroom instead of in the gym.
So let's talk a little bit about your story. You hail from New Jersey. As I understand it, you were born down the shore in Atlantic City, but lived most of your life in Piscataway. Am I correct?
Yes. I was born in Atlantic City. And then from Atlantic City, my family moved to Newark, New Jersey. And then I think in my middle school years, we moved to Piscataway, where I graduated from high school.
And growing up, basketball was obviously eventually became your passion. But was it always the thing growing up? I read a lot about you doing track and field.
Oh, yes. Track was my first passion. I remember when I was young, I had it all timed out. I said when I was going to be in the 1980 Olympics for track. I did the math and everything, you know, and in high school, I ran the 100. Well, back then it was, yeah, the 100 yard dash, the 220 instead of the 200, which it is now. And I was a part of the 440 relay and I high jumped. But I did that for 1 year because my passion changed. So, but track was my first passion, my first love.
What was it that, I don't want to say turned you on like you didn't know about basketball, but what was it that got you, you know, all in on basketball?
I think it was actually that first year playing in high school, you know. But just to go back a little bit, you know, I had two older brothers. They both passed now, but I had two older brothers. And in Newark, my dad used to take us to Clinton Avenue School to play. And it used to be me and my father against me and my two brothers. So that's something that I always did, you know, even going in the summer back to grandma's house in Atlantic City, I used to always play at Madison Avenue School. So basketball was always there. You know, but I think that first year in high school, I had so much, you know, success that I, you know, eventually just dropped track and just really focused on basketball. And I started to play it like all year in the snow with gloves on, everything. That just really took over, you know, it just took over my life.
Was there a person that pushed you to make the decision to try out for the basketball team or go to basketball?
Well, like I said, I had two older brothers and mm-hmm. they both played. One played at Piscataway High School. He was a senior. I was a freshman. My brother, Donald, and my oldest brother, Willie, he played at Westside in Newark. So, you know, it was something that was always in my family. As a matter of fact, my mother played in Atlantic City. My grandmother played and she back in the day, she was on the traveling team and won a championship. So, you know, it was something that was always in the family. So, you know, it was just something that was in me.
Now, I saw that you scored more than 2,000 points in high school, which is, when you consider shorter games, that's an incredible accomplishment. You know, when do you realize how good you are as a youngster, or are you just playing and having fun, you know, and you're maybe not quite cognizant of the rarefied air you are performing in?
You know, to be honest, I was just having fun. I really loved the game that much. It was fun, you know. In high school, you know how kids are. They always want to be around you anyway. But, I didn't look at it like I was so great. I was just having fun because I enjoyed the game. That's what I did, you know. So, no, I didn't realize it, I guess, you know. I didn't know. I was just having fun.
Was there a point when you start to realize that you're going to be able to take this further than most kids? Like when the colleges start, you start getting letters or phone calls, stuff like that?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, my brother's high school coach and my gym teacher, who was Mr. McGriff, who eventually took over Cheney University after Coach Stringer left. He, like I said, was my gym teacher, and he started talking to me. I remember playing AAU games, and he would prepare me, you know, for things like the foul shooting contest. I remember he and I shot foul shots one-on-one, you know, and I ended up winning that in the AAU. But, I guess my junior year, all the letters started coming in, you know, but I still didn't, I guess, just think that I was really so great. I mean, you know, I didn't think about it that way, but the letters started coming in from all over the country, you know. But McGriff, Mr. McGriff, had a lot to do with me really focusing in on paying attention to the letters, should I say. So he really helped me in making a decision as well.
To that point, was it ever overwhelming? You know, being 15, 16, 17, and like you said, you're getting letters from places all across the country, you know, but I guess having that support system obviously helped. But was it ever overwhelming, the recruiting process?
Well, no, I remember when I finally did understand what was going on, I remember getting letters and I remember saying to my mom, I'm not going to the West Coast. So letters like Long Beach, USC, UCLA, I didn't open. I'm not going to the South. I didn't open Old Dominion, Mississippi. I didn't open none of those letters because I remember saying I wanted to stay on the East Coast. And I didn't want to go to Rutgers because that was right there in my backyard. You know, Rutgers, Lewis Brown Arena is in Piscataway. So, you know, it wasn't overwhelming because a lot of letters I never did even bother to open because of their location, you know. So, you know, I did narrow it down to, I don't know if I'm jumping the gun, but I was going to University of Maryland. That's where I was going to go. That was my choice, which is an East Coast school, you know, but that changed, but that was my choice before it changed.
That was going to be my next question. So if you're set on Maryland, had Cheney been a school you had looked at and decided Maryland, or did you kind of learn about Cheney? Did Coach Stringer talk to you? Like, how does Cheney enter into the equation?
Well, I don't know which came first. I do remember Mr. McGriff taking me to watch Cheney versus Rutgers, but we were sitting way up high. It was back when Rutgers played in that little Douglas, or it's not even an arena, it's like a small gym. And I remember seeing Cheney, but I also remember one time Coach Stringer came to my game at Piscataway. And it was after the game, and she gave me her card. She said, hi, my name is Coach Stringer. She said, I know you're wet and you're tired, but just remember my name. And like I said, she gave me her card and she left. So, yeah, she did come to the game. But after that, Coach McGriff was in touch with her. And, you know, apart from me talking to a few coaches, I ended up speaking with Coach Cheney. John Cheney, who was the men's coach at Cheney, and Coach Stringer, they both came to visit me one day. And they sat down with my parents, my brother and I. And before she left, I had changed my mind. I said, I'm coming to play for you, just like that. That one conversation that I had with her and Coach Cheney was incredible. And I just changed my mind. And Maryland was a done deal. I decided to go play for her.
See, Vivian Stringer, you know, when you talk about the greats in women's basketball coaching, you really don't need, you know, two hands before you get to see Vivian Stringer. You talk about that conversation with her, Coach John Cheney, and we'll talk about how special the relationship was between the men's and the women's team in a little bit. But what was it about the initial, you know, when you first meet her and, you know, how she approached you when you first come to campus? What was the initial feel?
It was like I felt like she cared about me and my well-being. She was concerned about me, not me as an athlete, but me as a person, because I had spoken to other coaches and I didn't get that feeling. You know, it was new to me being away, you know, as a freshman leaving home, you know, and she was there for anything that I needed or, you know, if I needed to talk, she was always available. But it was just the feel that she felt for me as a person. It was like a security that, you know, of being away from home that I felt being at Cheney in her presence. Mm-hmm.
And it was Cheney State College at this point, not Cheney University, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So yes. how's the transition for you to life in college, you know, from a basketball standpoint? Are you comfortable right away? Or is it at times, you know, is the game faster than you were used to in high school and it took some adjustment? Do you remember like that first part of your freshman year, what it was like getting used to being a college basketball player?
No, I can't say it was adjustment. I felt like, because I always played on a high level, You know, I was always very competitive because I had two big brothers and I used to play them and I tried so hard to beat them. And one of my brothers was 7 years older than me. And he said he knew I was going to be good because I couldn't beat him and I would cry. Right. So I was always very competitive. I always played on a high level. So I don't remember like the game being hard for me or too fast for me or anything like that. You know, and then before the season started, the team would always, we always played together. Like in after classes, you know, we would go to the gym late at night. We would go to the gym and we would just practice, you know, and I didn't have any problems with them, you know, any problems. I wasn't intimidated because I was used to playing, you know, up and down the East Coast of New York, you know, the New York Summer Leagues. And so there was no intimidation. I just did what I knew how to do. So I believe I adjusted very well.
To that point, scout yourself for people that didn't get a chance to see you play. What made you special?
Well, first of all, I believe it was because I was so competitive and then I could play every position. In high school, I played the center, but yeah, I had one brother who was a point guard and one brother who was a center. So I got things from both of them and I ended up being a small forward. I had the jump shot. I can get the rebound, bring the ball up. I could handle the ball very well. A quick story about that. I had a Doberman and a German Shepherd, and I would be in the garage. This is how I learned to dribble. And I would play with them, like dribbling the ball, and they both would try to get the ball, and they couldn't get it. So I had two dogs. I'm between my legs, around my back, dribbling like that. And, you know, that made me quicker. So my ball handling skills were good. I could, you know, shoot inside. I could drive. So I was like 1 through 5. I could really play any position. So she put me at a small forward.
Do you remember your first game at Cheney?
Actually, I don't. I really don't. Everything is, you know, I don't. Like I said, I know it was special, but I just don't remember it. There's some games I remember, you know, and there's a lot that I don't. I remember the atmosphere in the gym. I remember the warm up. I remember sitting in the classroom before the game and Coach Stringer putting everything on the board. You know, I remember all of that. But to say, do I remember my first game? No, I couldn't even tell you who it was against.
So one of the things I found fascinating in talking to people was we talk, you know, obviously see Vivian Stringer and we mentioned John Cheney. So there's two legends as the head coaches at Cheney at this point, late 70s, early 80s. But one of the things I found fascinating is people have told me that the teams kind of practiced to get you weren't the women's and men's basketball teams. You were almost kind of one unit that worked together. Kind of talk to me about that dynamic because it's fascinating and unusual.
Yes, and it was. Wow. Coach Cheney was great. You know, he was a great coach. He was our coach as well. I know he and Vivian Stringer, Coach Stringer, before practice, they, you know, got together and created whatever they needed to create for practice or put all their skills or, you know, their mindset together. But as a player going in, you know, wow, playing with our men's team. I remember my freshman year, we had like 3 or 4 6'8" guys, George Melton, Andrew Fields, Roger Lasif. It was like four of them. Then it was like a couple 6'5"s. And, you know, look, we our first 30 minutes, we had to jog around the court and we would shoot at every basket. I remember always following a 6'5" guard named Charles Murphy. And he's the reason that my distance, I improved, like I could step out further because I would run behind him. He'd take a shot, I'd take a shot. He'd take a shot, I'd take a shot from the same, you know, from the same place on the court. So in that way, you know, it was just good. It was very competitive. The first hour and a half, we did drills with the men, like 3-on-2, 2-on-1. You know, the full court drills, maybe us setting up our press, them trying to break our press and vice versa. You know, so it was competitive. It was good for us because we were playing against men who were taller, bigger, stronger, quicker. But then it was good for them because they had to be more careful. They had to be more under control, you know, and Coach Chaney, he didn't care. You know, he would get on them. You know, he would get on the guys when they messed up. And he would get on us, and it was just one big family. And yes, I believe we were the only team to do that. And probably still to this day, we're probably the only, you know, school that the men and women's team practiced together. But we had great respect for one another, and we learned from each other, and we supported each other. So it was like they were our brothers and we were their sisters.
Yeah, to that point, that was kind of my next question. I mean, that the chemistry, I don't even know if I can get my head around what the chemistry must have been like in that gym.
Yeah, yeah, it was fun. You know, it was everybody came in there to work. You know, they didn't take it easy on us. We didn't take it easy on them. You know, it was about practice because that's what both coaches demanded. And, you know, it made us better. I'm sure it made them better. You know, so it was just about practice and trying to grow and improve our skills and come together as a team, you know, because even being in the school, at Cheney during the season, it was just about us, you know, everything outside of that, you know, it was just us. We were focused. So that was our little family right there.
I asked you about your first game overall. Leading up to your senior year when you guys make the run to the championship game. But what are some of your other memories from, you know, the first 3 years that really stand out from your days playing at Cheney?
Well, I remember, like I said, I was going to Maryland, right? So my first year at Cheney, my first season, we were undefeated, but we lost and got knocked out of playoffs, per se, by Maryland. That was our only loss, right? The second year, I think we lost two games, got knocked out by Maryland again. So my junior year now, Maryland comes to us. And I remember it was a game back and forth, tight game, and it was like 10 seconds left. They had just hit a shot and went up by one. And Coach Stringer called timeout and you know, showed us the play she wanted us to run. We took the ball out, dribbled it up court. They threw it to me. I got it. I faked and then went up and hit the jumper and we beat them at the buzzer. And that was our first time we beat them. And I tell you, our fans, I have to talk about our fans. Our fans were so incredible. They all ran out on the court and lifted me up. They were grabbing all the players, you know. So that was a memorable game. That's one I do remember because I always wanted to beat Maryland so, you know, so badly. But our fans, we had like the football team had their little section in the back all the way in the corner. You know, our gym was small and tight and it was like a wolf's den. You know, you might get in there, but you wasn't coming out with the win. And as a matter of fact, in my 4 years, we never lost at home. So that was a memorable experience, you know, hitting that shot to win that game and just the support that we have from, you know, from our fans. And another memory I have, but it was my senior year. Well, I might be jumping the gun.
Jump it all you want. Go ahead.
Okay. But we, you know, when I used to always go to Madison Square Garden for the Christmas tournament and see the girls play when I was in high school. So my freshman year, I said, Coach Stringer, can we play at the Garden? Finally, my senior year, we get to play at the Garden, and that's where I scored my 2,000th point in Madison Square Garden. You know, it was a bad time for our team because that's when we got the news of Coach Stringer's daughter, and she didn't go with us on that trip. So, but I did get my 2,000th point at Madison Square Garden. So the place I always wanted to play at, you know, and the Garden is the mecca of basketball. You know, so I got the 2,000th point at that, you know, at Madison Square Garden. So that was great for me.
Time for a break on One-on-One. We will continue our conversation with former Cheney women's basketball star Val Walker right after this.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day.
We saw up to a 10x return on our TikTok shop ads. A few years ago, I started sharing my love for fashion on social media and Willow Boutique was born. We're not just a place to shop, we've really become a community. TikTok allows us to find more people to have that great experience. I cannot imagine my business without TikTok. It's completely changed my life and I could not be happier.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
And we are back. Our guest on One-on-One this week, former Cheney women's basketball star, Val Walker. You guys have success your first 3 years. You go to the AIAW tournament. I think you win a game or two along the way. And then your senior year, the 81-82 season, what were the expectations coming in? I don't know if anybody says, oh, we got a chance to go to the national championship game. But you guys had to have a feel like we're good and we're going to be a tough out.
Well, yeah, my senior year, we did have a feel. We knew we were good because I know we hadn't lost at home. In my 4 years, we haven't lost 10 games. And going back to the junior year, the AIAW, we went out to California to play USC. And I remember the bus driver got lost. Okay, he got lost. So that game, it was like the first five dressed or the first five. We had to start. Either we were forfeit or the first five dressed was the one who started. So you know how that disrupted our mental, our flow of the game. So we kind of felt gypped, you know, And, you know, I don't know if that was a game to get to the Final Four, but we were in California and the bus driver gets lost. So going forward to my senior year, yeah, we had great expectations. You know, we had a lot of good players that came in, you know, like Deb Walker was behind me, Ann Strong, Yolanda Delaney, Pi Karen. And then we got a transfer, Rosetta Guilford from Newark, New Jersey, who went to Essex, who came in. And, you know, back when I was in high school, you she was a year ahead of me. She was all state. So I knew of her. So we had great expectations. Losing wasn't even a question, but it was one game at a time. We weren't thinking in the beginning, go to the NCAA championship. We didn't look at it like that. We just looked at every game we need to win because that's what we were used to doing.
You guys win 23 straight that season going in, and that 23-game winning streak takes you into the national championship game. Now, this is the first, just so I can mention the AIAW. That's what the women's basketball tournament was prior to this. In 82, this is the first NCAA women's basketball tournament. And when you look at the run you guys put together, you know, you're talking blue blood schools, you know, you're talking Auburn, North Carolina State, you know, you talked a lot about Maryland, but I mean, you know, this is incredible. Did you guys, as players, as college kids, AIAW, NCAA, did the difference mean anything, or was it just, hey, who's got next?
Right. It was who got next, you know, because you have to think about this. Cheney State, who expected us in all my 4 years? Nobody expected us, or I don't even know how much they knew of us, knew about us, but nobody expected us to beat schools like NC State, Kansas, Kansas State, Maryland, you know, all the schools you just named. Villanova back then was good, University of Penn, Rutgers, all of those schools we used to beat. So it wasn't, it didn't have anything to do with AIAW, NCAA. It was like, who's next? Who are we playing next? You know, it wasn't the conference. I mean, you know, the tournament title per se. It was just who was coming before us, you know, and Coach, she would talk a little bit, you know, I'm sure she knew more than she let us know about, I guess, people considering us the underdogs. I mean, we kind of knew because we were a small university. But see, what they didn't know is that not only myself, but the ones behind me that came in also had a chance to go to D1 schools. So you're looking at a team of players that all could have gone to Division I schools, but it was Coach Stringer that got us together. So, you know, they thought we were the underdogs, but if they did their homework correctly, they would have known that, you know, I was 2-year All-American in high school. You had players like that. You know, so it wasn't, you know, and we just chose a small school because of Coach Stringer. But, you know, it was like, well, who's next? You know, here's another game. We have to win this game. That was our mindset. We just wanted to win.
You mentioned how great the fans were and this level of basketball. You know, you guys played in Cope Hall, right? When for the home games. What was Cope Hall? That had to be a lot of fun. I think you might have referenced this a little bit earlier, but I want to dig into it. You know, that's a pretty small gym, but you fill that up and it's got to be electric.
Yeah, Cope Hall, have you ever gone to Duke?
No, I haven't had the chance.
Okay, well, Duke, we weren't that big, but that feel you have at Duke University, we had a small gym, but it was packed. It was packed. And it was like standing room packed, you know, and our fans were loud. You know, like I said, the football team had that corner. We had our cheerleaders and, you know, it was electrifying. You could feel it. You know, it was just a feel. And I know our fans probably intimidated a lot of schools, too. It wasn't an easy place to play, you know. And especially for our girls team, I don't know if you realize this, but when we had double headers with our men would play first. We was we would play second, you know, so the gym was electrifying. And as a result, like I told you, we in my 4 years and probably even after me, we never lost on our home court.
So what is it going into that NCAA tournament in 82? How exciting is it? And you kind of mentioned the 82 season. Coach Stringer has a situation with her kids facing some really serious health issues. So, you know, this is, I would imagine, where that family atmosphere, we're working with the men's team, that really helps a lot because it can help fill in the gaps when she had to be away to tend to her family.
Well, yes, I remember, if I can go back, it was after Thanksgiving break. When we came back, we got word that Coach, something was wrong with Nina, Coach Stringer's daughter. We didn't know what it was. And I know she would always go to, what's that, Children's Hospital, the one in Philly. I guess that's the name of it. You know, she was back and forth, but we still didn't know what was wrong, but we knew it was serious. So, like I said, now we're at the Garden and she's not there. And, you know, she's not at our games. And it hit us right at that moment, that Christmas tournament, that, you know, we didn't have her. So we had a bit of a slip. We did. We had a bit of a mental slip because our coach is not there and her daughter is really sick, you know, but coming back, you know, there were other games that she missed, but we had great assistant coaches, Coach Schaefer and Coach Hill, who would, you know, coach our games. And then, yes, practicing with the men, with Coach Janie still being there, you know, kept us on track, you know, and we, something clicked. We had to lift our spirits, and I guess we got together and we came to the conclusion that we have to do this, and we have to do this for Coach Stringer. And once we got that mindset and we were able to get back up, it was like, that was it. That's when we started to make our run.
So NCAA tournament in the opening round, you guys start, we mentioned the teams, but just to kind of get it in order. The first game is Auburn, and you guys, you played that game at home, didn't you?
Yes, we played that game at home because I believe we were number two in the country at that point. Because we, you know, we were number, I believe we were number two. But yes, we played Auburn at home. I do remember that. But, you know, it wasn't any big deal. It was just another name. You know, it was another university. It wasn't like, oh, this is Auburn Division I. No, it wasn't that. We, you know, it was like, here's another opponent. Right. So we took care of them.
Yeah, it was Auburn, then North Carolina State, Kansas State, and Maryland. That leads you up. The Kansas State win gets you into the Final Four. You know, what does that feel like? Cheney State College, you talk about all these other schools and Division I and all that. And, you know, did you guys appreciate the magnitude of what you were doing at the time as this little historically black college in Eastern Pennsylvania? And you're beating up all these, you know, premier programs and stuff like that.
But see, like I said, we didn't look at ourselves as a little, you know, I mean, like I said, we all of us could have played on any one of those schools. So we didn't look at it like they were so grand and we weren't. You know, I guess that's the confidence that we had in ourselves that the coaches instilled in us. It didn't matter who you were, you know, and as far as making history, we just wanted to play. I know I just wanted to play. I realized, okay, we're going to the Final Four. Now I realize we have a chance to win. But it wasn't like, oh, this is Kansas or this is NC State. Like, no, they were just another school. You know, and when you think about it, we were number two. I believe we were number two in the country. So all of them were behind us.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Mm-hmm. So. And like I said, we always played Rutgers. We always played Penn State. We always played Villanova. That was every year. And that's another thing I like to mention. Coach Stringer, what she did, our conference teams were East Stroudsburg, Bloomsburg, Slippery Rock, Edinburgh. That was our conference. But the games outside of the conference, that's when she would schedule Maryland, Rutgers, Penn State. So we were playing all these schools anyway. She knew, you know, I guess she knew that they were top schools. But for us, it's just another game on a team on the schedule. But she knew the magnitude of playing those schools, you know, because you had to play those schools in order to be recognized on a certain level. I know that now. I knew that afterwards because, you know, but as a player at that point, all I know is this is another opponent.
What's the celebration like when you guys win to go to the Final Four?
Oh, well, we come back and all the fans are there. Like I said, our fans are great. You know, our fans are there with, you know, pom-poms. They, when the bus pull up, they're there cheering, and they may have had some type of party or something. I don't know. I'm sure I didn't go. You know, I wasn't like the party type person, but they were really supportive on campus. You know, even the instructors, you know, they were happy for us and they were rooting for us. And, you know, that's what made Cheney so special, because not only the team, you know, the fans, the, you know, everybody, they rooted for us. They cared about us. And, you know, not just basketball, every sport. So
then you beat Maryland. Obviously special for you to go to the final. What is it like to be a win away from a national championship at that point? There's two teams left. I mean, you mentioned being number two. I think it's one thing to be listed number two, but it's another thing when there's two teams left and you're one of them.
Yeah, I think that is true. I think I didn't sleep that night. You know, I didn't sleep that night. It was exciting. But see, the thing too, at that time, Coach Stringer was going back and forth as well. She would coach us in the game, fly out that night, go back to Philly. This is through the whole tournament. Go back to Philly, come back, practice, you know. So it was a lot of mixed emotions, but I know that I didn't sleep that night. And, you know, I was excited and ready. So.
And you get Louisiana Tech in the final. And Louisiana Tech, you know, they were kind of they were at that Tennessee-UConn level that people came to appreciate, but they were a little bit beforehand. What's the feeling like pregame? You know, you talk about not sleeping. You know, what's the mixture of nerves, excitement, anticipation? You know, what do you remember kind of running the gamut of emotions leading into that? Or were you kind of just, all right, let's get to work?
Well, I mean, warm up was warm up. You know, once you're out there, the ball goes up, it's time to play. I just know the night before I couldn't sleep. But now, you know, in the locker room, you're used to the coach giving her talk. The team was together and we were about business, you know, but it's normal to have a little bit of nerves, but that only lasts for a moment. You know, it wasn't like a nervous, but I think you should have a little bit of nerve or feel a little something, because I know for me, in that way, I know I'm ready. You know, I'm ready. If I don't ever remember going into a game, even after college, where I would play and don't feel anything, something's wrong. So, you know, I felt a little something, but it was about business. So, you know, it's about business.
And you guys got off to a pretty good start in that one. You led for a lot of the first half, but it's, you know, La Tech kind of took control of the game and they were able to take it to the finish line. What are your memories specifically of the game?
Well, what I remember I had one foul early, and I remember getting a steal, and I went to pass it up to Rosetta Guilford, and I say Mulkey jumped in front of me. They call it like they want to call it. They call me for an offensive foul. We were ahead at that point. So now I go to the bench. I think Deb Walker also gets the second foul. So both of us go to the bench in the first half. And that's when Louisiana Tech took the lead. You know, that one play, if I, you know, Rose Red was wide open down the other end. That not making that call could have changed the whole thing. Could have changed the whole game, because we would have scored two more points. I still would have had one foul. And I would have been able to play. So that right there is something that I'm like, wow, you know, that hurt. And then the second half, you know, we score, they would score, you know, but we didn't stop them enough to score. But when I look at the game, we, you know, that's a game that we could have won, you know, foul trouble got in our way, you know, but. It's not, I still don't say they were better than us. I think on any given day, we could have beat them. Like they beat us, we could have played them the next day and beat them. I don't believe that they were better than us. I just believe that foul trouble and, you know, maybe a few mistakes changed the game.
What's it like? The thing that is great slash awful about the NCAA tournament is the emotion and then the finality, how all this work and all this energy and it just comes to a screeching halt. You know, what was the emotion like when you kind of look up and the scoreboard and the time left and the math just doesn't work? Like, what's it like when you realize this wonderful ride, not just this season, but your college basketball career is coming to a close?
Yeah, that was a hurtful time. You know, me personally, I held it together on the floor. You know, you have to congratulate the other team, get the personal awards. What is it? All tournament and all of that. But I mean, it hurts so bad because we lost. It was my last college game. You know, I was leaving Cheney. So all of that, it was terrible. And, you know, even to this day, when I watch the March Madness, which I think is the best basketball, and I see the team that lose and I see them with their head down and all that, it hurt me because I know what they're feeling, you know, and that's to this day. That's something that is still in me. You know, I don't think that I would ever shake that because it's like I was so close. We were so close. And we didn't get the win. So I could, you know, empathize with the players when I watched them crying and all of that, because I felt it. I know exactly what they're going through.
And I can tell right now, 40 years later, that it's still there.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, that, because if you love what you do, you know, I love the game of basketball, and it, you know, and it's something you can't reverse the time and get it back, you know, and even in my career after that, I went to championships and fell short, you know, so, you know, that's something you can't get back, you know, and some people might say, well, at least you were there, but I'm like, okay, well, you must not have ever played sports because we were there, we made history, but for me, we didn't win, and that was the goal, you know, so.
Need to take another break. We will continue our conversation with Val Walker right after this. And we are back. Former Cheney women's basketball star Val Walker is our guest this week on One-on-One. How much, you're the only HBCU team to get to the Final Four, to the NCAA tournament game. How long did it take you to really appreciate the magnitude of this and kind of not just, yeah, we got to the national championship game, but the only HBCU to do this, to, you know, to get to this. Did you feel that?
When it happened, I mean, I don't know exactly when it hit me, you know, because I left and I went over to Italy. I played professional in Italy from 1982 to 1994. So I was kind of away from the game. Then when I came back, the focus was more on WNBA. So I fell off of the college game a little bit, you know, and then Coach Stringer went to Rutgers and I you know, got back into it. But I think it's really hitting me more like in recently than in the past, because when you look at it, it's 40 years, you know, that's a long time, you know, we did it, we were the first, and I personally don't know if there's going to be another school that can do it, you know, never say never, but it's going to be something that's very hard to accomplish in these days, you know.
And I know you obviously appreciated that Coach Stringer and Coach Cheney were both special. But when you look back and you think that these two legends, giants of college basketball, and you got to learn from them every day. And I think that's something when you're younger, yeah, you know, they're a good coach, but they're your coach. You're the player. You're trying to win. As you get further away from it, do you ever have moments where you just go, wow, I was just in the middle of something incredible?
Yes. Yeah. Afterwards, like now, or, you know, as I got older, you know, because then, you know, when you're in it, you're in it, you know, but when you're out of it and you look back at the accomplishments of the two coaches, both of them Hall of Famers, both of them, you know, Coach Stringer taking three schools to the national championship, Coach Chaney winning in 78 and then going to Temple and doing a good job. You know, it was after the fact, you know, that, wow, yeah, we were coached by two great coaches. And we, you know, that was a blessing because, you know, you're lucky if you get one, and then to have two. And I know that's what made Chaney basketball so special. You know, the minds that we had, great minds, two legendary coaches. So, yeah, that was a blessing that I've realized now. Didn't know then. Because I something like that has to unfold for you to really look back and appreciate.
You mentioned Italy. You played several years overseas. I mean, you played so long, I'm assuming overall a positive experience. But I know a lot of times I talk to people and playing overseas can kind of run the gamut to well-run organization. They did everything first class to, well, I only got paid one of the 3 months I was there, and I had to get my own plane home because they canceled my ticket because I fouled out of the last game. Like, all kinds of different experiences. Overall, what was it like for you?
Oh, no. It wasn't. I went to Italy, and back when I got out of school, it was the second year that they allowed Americans to play in Italy. But Italy was where the All-Americans went. That was the top, you know, that was the top country. And I remember them, they paid for me to come out there and try out. I had an agent, and then I got an agent. I think they contacted Coach Stringer, and they flew me out there, and I played in Milan. What's his name? Mike D'Antoni, McAdoo, and all of them. They were in Milan. I played for Milan, but I mean, they gave me a car, they paid for my apartment, several tickets. I flew my family out there. So, you know, I had first class treatment. I'm surprised when you say, you know, people had to pay for their way home. No, I had great experiences, you know, they endorsements, you know, for back at that time, you know, decent contract. And I had a very good experience. You know, I played for different teams. I played for Milan for 3 years. I played 1 year. I got hurt, came home, and was a grad assistant at Temple. And that was Marilyn Stevens last year. And then I went back to Italy for like 10 or 11 years. But I played on like four different teams. But each team I played with, you know, I was treated well. I was treated really well. So I have no horror stories. And, you know, I just got tired. I really got tired because, you know, I played for top teams and we would play in the cup tournament. And if you know anything about soccer in Europe, like you might have Real Madrid playing Naples and, you know, the countries are playing each other. And me playing in the cup games for my team, that's what we did. So I got to play in Russia, Spain, France, Vienna, Poland. I played in all those countries outside of my regular season. I kind of got burnt out. But even before that, I forgot to tell you, when I was in college, I played for our national team as well. You know, but around 30, I think I retired at 34, 35. I just got burnt out. It was, you know, it was a lot. But I enjoyed it. I'm still in touch with some of the players today. So I've had a positive experience being in Italy.
Oh, you mentioned the U.S. national team. You know, what was that experience like?
It was good. I remember I played with the Jones Cup. I think we got the silver. I know I tried out for the Olympics in 1980, but that was the year that we boycotted.
The boycott, yeah.
Right, right. And then I mentioned that I played in Italy. Well, I played for KGAL. We played in Cuba. I forget which games it was, Yugoslavia and places like that. But like I said, my first year in Italy, I played and I got hurt, even though I finished the season. So the next year, I wanted to stay home and rehabilitate my knee. And that was the year that they invited me to the Pan American Games. And I made the decision not to go because, you know, those playing in those tournaments, you would practice two, sometimes double and triple sessions. And I knew I needed to rehabilitate my knee. So I didn't go. And I believe that hurt me when it came to trying out for the 84 Olympics, because usually the team that make the Olympics are the Pan American team the year before. So I missed the Olympics, you know, but and then I just never tried out anymore. But so that's the story to that.
This is the 40th anniversary of that 82 team, your senior year team, that Cheney, that went to the final. And there's been a wonderful push, a grassroots push to get the story out there and a lot of discussion about it. For the years before, do you feel like that team, that accomplishment got the attention and recognition it deserved until this recent push here?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, it seemed like maybe every 10 years you might see a little clip of the game. But I think that might be one of the issues with women's basketball. You know, if you look back at the men, NCAA, March Madness, and even the NBA, they keep their history going. They make you aware of their history. They speak about the past. And I know I'm going to the NBA, but just look what they did with the 75th anniversary and the 50th anniversary, you know, but they didn't tell the story. But why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you promote the first NCAA championship, especially after the 10th year? It should have been a big celebration. You know, I don't know why. I don't know what's happened with the media, why it wasn't pushed, but I think that's important for women's basketball. You know, we talk about, you know, just having a visual or the support that we need. You know, our story isn't out there, and it's not just us, it's women's basketball, period. But how could you not talk about the first one? You know, I don't understand why, you know, but the very first one, it's not like, you know, we came around in, you know, in 18 something, you know, this was like 40 years ago. That's not a long ago. So, you know, and they still need to do a better job. And, you know, thank God for Kyle and Leroy and the different people who are trying to push this, because if they weren't trying to push it, if Cheney alumni wasn't pushing it, it still wouldn't get out there. And that's a shame.
And how tough is it, you know, the athletic department at Cheney, it's had a lot of trouble. I know they haven't been able to, because of the pandemic the last couple of years, there hasn't been women's basketball. Does it, for lack of a better term, does it hurt to kind of see where Cheney women's basketball is now or isn't?
Yeah, it does. It does. And, you know, what really hurt is the fact that you may have people going there and they don't even know the history of their school. I don't know what happened when our athletic director left. But all I know is, for example, my All-American plaques, I was All-American twice at Cheney for 2 years. My stuff isn't there. Nothing is not there. You know, so I don't know what happened to all our, you know, all our trophies and everything. So there are people who went to the school that I know. I knew a teacher who teaches with me, who came after me, who knew nothing about Cheney basketball. How is that possible? So I don't know what happened, because like I said, I was gone, but it's like everything disappeared. And so if you go there and you can't see it, how would you know? So once again, like I said, thank God for Kyle, who coached there, and Leroy, and, you know, they were there and they're pushing for it. But yeah, it's really bad to see. You know, it's going to take a lot to try to bring this school up. You know, the school itself, even enrollment is down. You know, we need a lot of support, a lot of help in bringing the school back up, you know, and especially athletic. And not only basketball, we had also a good football team. I don't know if you remember Andre Waters. Mm-hmm. He played at Cheney. He was my classmate. You know, he was a couple years behind me, but I know our football team was like 10-1, 10-0, you know, so I guess they're still playing football. They're still playing football, but even the men's basketball, you know, it's just bad. It's, you know, it's a bad feeling.
But that being said, how much has it heartened you the last several months or year to, you know, have your story? I know Sports Illustrated did a wonderful article about the team and stuff like that. And, you know, the fact that people are coming around and paying attention and learning the history and not just learning it, celebrating it.
So that's a good thing. You know, what we did, you know, we made history or her story, you know, and a lot of kids need to know, you know, because, you know, women's basketball, you know, there are a lot of girls out there who want to play and they need someone to look up to. You know, you can say, OK, go to the NBA, but you still, I mean, the WNBA, you still have to get to college first. So, you know, even in that Philadelphia area and the East Coast, wherever, you know, our story needs to be celebrated. It needs to be told. People need to know what we've done, you know, and the part that we played in women's basketball and as far as being a HBCU.
And my final question, we've talked about so many wonderful accomplishments and moments. What are you most proud of your basketball? You know, when you kind of look back at the, you know, the whole thing, what are you most proud of?
You mean my career or you mean at Cheney?
Overall, altogether.
Well, I'm proud to say that I had the opportunity to play under Vivian Stringer. You know, I'm grateful. I'm so thankful that she came to watch me play and asked me to play. I think that was the best decision that I made, you know, in my career. But, you know, starting that led me on to being able to play overseas, which I really had such a great time. That was such a great, you know, time for me, one that I'll never forget. So just being able to play under Coach Stringer and then playing, you know, have an opportunity to travel the world, let that lead me to traveling the world to doing what I love. I feel like I'm blessed and I'm thankful. And I say it was a good journey.
Valerie Walker, this was so much fun. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you for having me.
And that will do it for this week's episode. Want to thank former Cheney University women's basketball star Val Walker for being our guest this week. Now, if you like this show and you want to help us out, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at @OneOnOnePod. You can follow me on Twitter as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
And we are back. Former Cheney women's basketball star Val Walker is our guest this week on One-on-One. How much, you're the only HBCU team to get to the Final Four, to the NCAA tournament game. How long did it take you to really appreciate the magnitude of this? And kind of not just, yeah, we got to the national championship game, but the only HBCU to do this, to get to this. Did you feel that?
When it happened, I mean, I don't know exactly when it hit me, because I left and I went over to Italy. I played professional in Italy from 1982 to 1994. So I was kind of away from the game. Then when I came back, the focus was more on WNBA. So I fell off of the college game a little bit, and then Coach Stringer went to Rutgers and I got back into it. But, I think it's really hitting me more like in recently than in the past, because when you look at it, it's 40 years, that's a long time. That's a long time. We did it. We were the first. And I personally don't know if there's going to be another school that can do it. Never say never, but it's going to be something that's very hard to accomplish in these days,
And I know you obviously appreciated that Coach Stringer and Coach Cheney were both special. But when you look back and you think that these two legends, giants of college basketball, and you got to learn from them every day. And I think that's something when you're younger, they're a good coach, but they're your coach, you're the player, you're trying to win. As you get further away from it, do you ever have moments where you just go, wow, I was just in the middle of something incredible?
Yes. Yeah, afterwards, like now, or, as I got older, because then, when you're in it, you're in it, but when you're out of it and you look back, and then you look back at the accomplishments of the two coaches, both of them Hall of Famers, both of them, Coach Stringer taking three schools to the national championship, Coach Cheney winning in 78 and then going to Temple and doing a good job. It was after the fact, that, wow, yeah, we were coached by two great coaches, and we, that was a blessing, because, you're lucky if you get one, and then to have two. And I know that's what made Cheney basketball so special. The minds that we had, great minds, two legendary coaches. So yeah, that was a blessing that I realize now, didn't know then. Because something like that has to unfold for you to really look back and appreciate.
You mentioned Italy. You played several years overseas. I mean, he played so long, I'm assuming overall a positive experience. But I know a lot of times I talk to people and playing overseas can kind of run the gamut to well-run organization. They did everything first class to, well, I only got paid one of the 3 months I was there. And I had to get my own plane home because they canceled my ticket because I fouled out of the last game. Like all kinds of different experiences. Overall, what was it like for you?
Oh, no, it wasn't. I went to Italy, and back when I got out of school, it was the second year that they allowed Americans to play in Italy. But Italy was where the All-Americans went. That was the top, you know, that was the top country. And I remember them, they paid for me to come out there and try out. I had an agent, and then I got an agent. I think they contacted Coach Stringer, and they flew me out there, and I played in Milan. What's his name? Mike D'Antoni, McAdoo, and all of them. They were in Milan. I played for Milan, but I mean, they gave me a car. They paid for my apartment, maids, several tickets. I flew my family out there. So, you know, I had first class treatment. I you know, I'm surprised when you say, you know, people had to pay for their way home. No, I had great experiences. You know, they endorsements, you know, for back at that time, you know, decent contract. And I had a very good experience. You know, I played for different teams. I played for Milan for 3 years. I played 1 year. I got hurt, came home, and was a grad assistant at Temple. And that was Marilyn Stevens last year. And then I went back to Italy for like 10 or 11 years. But I played on like four different teams. But each team I played with, you know, I was treated well. I was treated really well. So I have no horror stories. And, you know, I just got tired. I really got tired because, you know, I played for top teams and we would play in the cup tournament. And if you know anything about soccer in Europe, like you might have Real Madrid playing Naples and, you know, the countries are playing each other. And me playing in the cup games for my team, that's what we did. So I got to play in Russia, Spain, France, Vienna, Poland. I played in all those countries outside of my regular season. I kind of got burnt out. But even before that, I forgot to tell you, when I was in college, I played for our national team as well. You know, but around 30, I think I retired at 34, 35. I just got burnt out. It was, you know, it was a lot. But I enjoyed it. I'm still in touch with some of the players today. So I've had a positive experience being in Italy.
You mentioned the U.S. national team. You know, what was that experience like?
It was good. I remember I played with the Jones Cup. I think we got the silver. I know I tried out for the Olympics in 1980, but that was the year that we boycotted.
The boycott, yeah.
Right, right. And then I mentioned that I played in Italy. Well, I played for KGAL. We played in Cuba. I forget which games it was, Yugoslavia and places like that. But like I said, my first year in Italy, I played and I got hurt, even though I finished the season. So the next year, I wanted to stay home and rehabilitate my knee. And that was the year that they invited me to the Pan American Games. And I made the decision not to go because, you know, those playing in those tournaments, you would practice two, sometimes double and triple sessions. And I knew I needed to rehabilitate my knee. So I didn't go. And I believe that hurt me when it came to trying out for the 84 Olympics, because usually the team that make the Olympics are the Pan American team the year before. So I missed the Olympics, you know, and then I just never tried out anymore. But so that's the story to that.
This is the 40th anniversary of that 82 team, your senior year team, that Cheney, that went to the final. And there's been a wonderful push, a grassroots push to get the story out there and a lot of discussion about it. For the years before, do you feel like that team, that accomplishment, got the attention and recognition it deserved until this recent push here?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, it seemed like maybe every 10 years you might see a little clip of the game. But I think that might be one of the issues with women's basketball. You know, if you look back at the men, NCAA, March Madness, and even the NBA, they keep their history going. They make you aware of their history. They speak about the past. And I know I'm going to the NBA, but just look what they did with the 75th anniversary and the 50th anniversary, you know, but they didn't tell the story. And but why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you promote the first NCAA championship, especially after the 10th year? It should have been a big celebration. You know, I don't know why. I don't know what's happened with the media, why it wasn't pushed, but I think that would have been, that's important for women's basketball. You know, we talk about, you know, just having a visual or the support that we need. You know, our story isn't out there, and it's not just us, it's women's basketball, period. But how could you not talk about the first one? You know, I don't understand why, you know, but the very first one, it's not like, you know, we came around in, you know, in 18 something, you know, this was like 40 years ago. That's not a long ago. So, you know, and they still need to do a better job. And, you know, thank God for Kyle and Leroy and the different people who are trying to push this, because if they weren't trying to push it, if Cheney alumni wasn't pushing it, it still wouldn't get out there. And that's a shame.
And how tough is it? You know, the athletic department at Cheney, it's had a lot of trouble. I know they haven't been able to, because of the pandemic, the last couple of years, there hasn't been women's basketball. Does it, for lack of a better term, does it hurt to kind of see where Cheney women's basketball is now or isn't?
Yeah, it does. It does. And, you know, what really hurt is the fact that you may have people going there and they don't even know the history of their school. I don't know what happened when our athletic director left. But all I know is, for example, my All-American plaques, I was All-American twice at Cheney for 2 years. My stuff isn't there. Nothing is not there. You know, so I don't know what happened to all our, you know, all our trophies and everything. So there are people who went to the school that I know. I knew a teacher who teaches with me, who came after me, who knew nothing about Cheney basketball. How is that possible? So I don't know what happened, because like I said, I was gone, but it's like everything disappeared. And so if you go there and you can't see it, how would you know? So once again, like I said, thank God for Kyle, who coached there, and Leroy, and, you know, they were there and they're pushing for it. But yeah, it's really bad to see. You know, it's going to take a lot to try to bring this school up. You know, the school itself, even enrollment is down. You know, we need a lot of support, a lot of help in bringing the school back up, you know, and especially athletic. And not only basketball, we had also a good football team. I don't know if you remember Andre Waters.
Mm-hmm.
He played at Cheney. He was my classmate. You know, he was a couple years behind me, but I know our football team was like 10-1, 10-0, you know, so I guess they're still playing football. They're still playing football, but even the men's basketball, you know, it's just bad. It's, you know, it's a bad feeling.
But that being said, how much has it heartened you the last several months or year to, you know, have your story? I know Sports Illustrated did a wonderful article about the team and stuff like that. And, you know, the fact that people are coming around and paying attention and learning the history and not just learning it, celebrating it.
So that's a good thing. You know, what we did, you know, we made history, or her story, you know, and a lot of kids need to know, you know, because, you know, women's basketball, you know, there are a lot of girls out there who want to play, and they need someone to look up to. You know, you can say, okay, go to the NBA, but you still, I mean, the WNBA, you still have to get to college first. So, you know, even in that Philadelphia area and the East Coast, wherever, you know, Our story needs to be celebrated. It needs to be told. People need to know what we've done, you know, and the part that we played in women's basketball and as far as being an HBCU.
And my final question, we've talked about so many wonderful accomplishments and moments. What are you most proud of your basketball? You know, when you kind of look back at the, you know, the whole thing, what are you most proud of?
You mean my career or you mean at Cheney?
Overall, altogether.
Well, I'm proud to say that I had the opportunity to play under Vivian Stringer. You know, I'm grateful. I'm so thankful that she came to watch me play and asked me to play. I think that was the best decision that I made, you know, in my career. But, you know, starting that led me on to being able to play overseas, which I really had such a great time. That was such a great, you know, time for me, one that I'll never forget. So just being able to play under Coach Stringer and then playing, you know, have an opportunity to travel the world. Let that lead me to traveling the world to doing what I love. I feel like I'm blessed and I'm thankful. And I say it was a good journey.
Valerie Walker, this was so much fun. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you for having me.
And that will do it for this week's episode. Want to thank former Cheney University women's basketball star Val Walker for being our guest this week. Now, if you like this show and you want to help us out, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at @OneOnOnePod. You can follow me on Twitter as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Thanks to TikTok ads, I was able to open up a business with my childhood friend and even hire employees.
My name is Julian, and I am one of the founders of The Snacks Lab.
We are an exotic snack company. We import snacks from all over the world. We had over $100,000 in sales from our TikTok ads in the first month. So our orders went from 5 a day to over 250 orders a day. You definitely have to use TikTok ads.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.